You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Yeah, I am a scientist. Yeah, I am a scientist. Yeah, I am a scientist. We gotta live on science alone.
Welcome to Unbiased Science, where we bring scientific method to the madness. I'm your host and public health scientist, Dr. Jess Steyer. And today I'm joined by a special guest, Dr. Norbert Norb Kaminsky, who holds a PhD in toxicology and physiology. He's the director of the Institute for Integrative Toxicology at Michigan State and the interim director of the Center for Research on Ingredient Safety. And today Norb is joining us to talk about some of the buzz around heavy metals, in particular lead. I'm sure many of you have seen the headline. Concerns specifically about Stanley cups. I know many of us have them in our cupboards right now, and also about the presence of lead in baby foods. So Norb, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm really excited to chat with you about this.
Well, thanks for the invitation, Jess. It's a pleasure to join you.
So let's kick things off with a conversation around heavy metals. So can you just walk our audience through, you know, what are heavy metals and maybe just a little bit of a background on lead specifically?
Sure. Well, heavy metals really are comprised of about 23 different elements, and that's 23 out of about 118. And these tend to be of higher density. And so, you know, the ones that I think we're probably most concerned about are the environmental ones, things like lead, mercury, cadmium, chromium, arsenic. I would say those are probably like the big five that, you know, people are probably most concerned about. You know, it would be different from an occupational standpoint, you know, depending on where you're working. But, you know, for the average person, I would say those are really the main ones that I think typically people are concerned about, especially from an environmental exposure.
So what are some of the ways that people, and putting what we're going to talk about today, you know, Stanley cups and baby foods, what are some of the ways that people might be exposed to lead? You know, does it occur naturally? What are sources of lead exposure?
Well, lead is a natural element. And, you know, the ways that people are most likely exposed to lead, you know, we've heard a lot about the deteriorating infrastructure. So, you know, clearly if you're in an older home and you have lead pipes, that would be one way. Also, paint chips, we hear a lot about that. Although, you know, lead has been banned from paint for a long time. You know, there's a lot of people that are renovating old homes and, you know, the dust from those, you know, also, you know, from soil. But typically, you know, as we banned lead from gasoline, you know, and that happened decades ago, the amount of lead that's normally found in soils is much lower. So those are the main ways. Now, there have been some instances, and you brought up the baby food, and especially the recent poisoning of probably about 60 children in the U.S. from these applesauce pouches. And I think it's still under investigation, but it sounds like that probably came from adulterated cinnamon. And so, again, if that in fact is true, this really wasn't accidental. It was, you know, potentially deliberate. And again, the FDA is still investigating that. But that's what it's looking like right now. Yeah.
Maybe that's a good starting point. So I wanted to bring up the FDA has announced something called their Closer to Zero plan. So the FDA continues with its plan aimed at significantly reducing heavy metal contamination, including lead, of course, in baby foods. The plan involves setting stricter limits, working with manufacturers, and increasing testing. And as you said, there are these ongoing investigations about these horrible multiple exposures that you mentioned in the baby food pouches. I know that my kids lived on those pouches when they were little. They were always sucking them down. They were easy to throw in my purse. So I understand why this has really raised a lot of red flags for parents. The House Subcommittee on Economic and Consumer Policy continues to investigate major baby food manufacturers. Recent reports reveal that some companies knowingly released products with high levels of heavy metals. And as you said, you know, this is an ongoing thing, and heaven forbid this wasn't at all intentional. Obvious there will be legal repercussions. And in the meantime, there are lawsuits. So parents are filing lawsuits against major baby food companies alleging harm caused by lead and other heavy metals in their products. So Norb, can we talk about levels of lead that are considered dangerous? Are there any safe levels of exposure to lead?
Well, I would first of all, I'll say that in general, you know, one of the characteristics of most heavy metals is that they can be toxic at relatively low concentrations. And the real concern here is that, especially with lead, children, especially at the age of, you know, birth to, well, actually even before birth, if they're exposed, you know, through, you know, placental blood, they're very, very susceptible to neurological problems. And so typically, we certainly want to minimize the exposure to lead. You know, to put a hard number where there may be danger is a bit difficult. You know, internationally, about 10 micrograms per deciliter is kind of the number that is used. But quite honestly, I would say that number is pretty high, and certainly 1 to 5 micrograms per deciliter, I think, would be a concern, and so especially for children below the age of 2, and again, most of the concern is around the developmental neurotoxic effects. But, you know, we also know that lead has effects on many, if not most, organ systems. And one of the reasons is that the body really doesn't distinguish between lead and calcium. And so lead is taken up just by the same mechanisms as calcium. And in fact, you know, the bones are really the primary place where lead accumulates. So if you're repeatedly exposed to lead, you know, your bones will be the primary place where lead will accumulate. And there's always this equilibrium where these elements like lead can be released from bone and go back into the bloodstream and then be distributed around the body. So that's one of the major concerns, that it accumulates. So typically what you detect in blood is only about 5% of what is present systemically.
Interesting. So let's say I'm the parent of a toddler who loves these things. And I, like I said, I have them in my purse. I'm always giving them to my child. You know, and now I'm nervous with these headlines. Should I take my child to get tested? Are there certain signs I should be looking out for? Should I throw out these pouches? How would you advise parents of young children who eat these pouches?
Well, again, I think that's a difficult question to answer. But, you know, Jess, as we've talked previously, you know, one of the things that I think you want to do is purchase those kinds of products, especially for your children, you know, from name brand manufacturers. And, you know, we've talked about that in the past. And, you know, I know we're in economic difficult times for a lot of families. So they're, you know, kind of go up for the off brands because they're cheaper. But the supply chain now is so complicated. It's worldwide. And depending on the manufacturers, some, you know, monitor that supply chain more carefully than others. And so I think my recommendation, my personal recommendation would be that I would would stick with the name brands.
And you're right. I mean, we have talked about this and in the context of other products as well, you know, and then unfortunately we'll get accused of being pro big industry. But the truth of the matter is that those large companies do have the resources to do the rigorous safety testing that's necessary. And there's so much oversight of their products. And so that's why I agree with that recommendation. I do want to be clear here that, you know, there are different sources of potential contamination. And I want to come back to what you said. I know you mentioned cinnamon, and I'm curious to hear more about that. It could be a result of factory contamination, but not necessarily, right? The contaminations can also result from environmental contamination, such as plants growing in polluted soil, which can incorporate heavy metals in the soil. As you said, some heavy metals are naturally occurring in soil, like arsenic and cadmium, although they can be at increased concentrations due to pollution. Contamination can also occur in raw ingredients. So, you know, I know an alternative, a lot of folks are resorting to homemade baby foods, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but that doesn't necessarily ensure the absence entirely of heavy metals. I think overall, this really stresses the importance of varied diet, different food sources. You know, I personally probably, I wouldn't have a pack of the same, you know, pouches from the same company and give that to my child multiple times a day, every single day. I'd really lean into various food sources and diversify a bit. Do you have any other thoughts on that? And then can you share, you know, what you were saying, a little bit more about what you were saying about cinnamon and why you think that might be the potential source?
The point you made make about a varied diet is absolutely so critical. And it's not just for children, it's for all of us. And I think that that is one insurance policy where we can minimize our exposure to a lot of things that may not be healthy. So moderation is always important, as well as a varied diet. Shortly before joining you here today, I was trying to follow up on that incident with the baby pouches with applesauce. And in fact, the FDA has come out recently, and they seem to have pinpointed cinnamon as maybe being the source of this, and I think in Ecuador. And so they're following up on that. But again, you know, spices in general tend to be pretty expensive, and this is a way where potentially some manufacturers might be cutting corners a little bit in terms of where they're obtaining their spices and, you know, are these spices adulterated or at least contaminated? And so that right now appears to be, at least from what I've seen most recently from the FDA, that's one of the areas they're following up on this specific incident.
Interesting. Wow. So I wonder whether this might prompt folks to maybe they continue to buy pouches, but they're specifically avoiding ones that contain cinnamon. It sounds like this is an ongoing investigation and we should know more soon. But I think we all know that, you know, things that involve the government, they do happen slowly. And I don't necessarily say that as a criticism. I think they're really trying to be rigorous in their approach to this. So just wanted to mention that I know people want answers immediately, but that's just not how things happen, right?
but again, it gets to the point that, you know, the supply chain now is global, and, you know, things are coming from all around the world. And, you know, I think it's become a lot more complicated, especially for producers and manufacturers.
Well, and it's interesting what you said, and I'm just going back to a point that we just discussed about, you know, encouraging people to buy from the larger companies because of their, you know, rigorous oversight, regulatory, rigorous testing. I'm thinking back to our episode on pet foods, even, you know, all the things that people don't realize. Sometimes it seems attractive to support small businesses and boutique companies, and I get that, right? But people have to understand the limitations and shortcomings that those smaller boutique companies do not have the resources of these larger companies. So before we move on to Stanley Cups, is there anything else you want to share with folks about baby foods? Any key takeaways or messages that you might have for parents listening?
Maybe coming back to lead just for a little bit, you know, one of the things that we're really interested right now through our Center for Research on Ingredient Safety are the effects of lead on the developing immune system. And we currently have a study that is ongoing as a partnership with Corewell Health, which is one of the largest health providers in the state of Michigan. And what our study is doing is we're recruiting up to 800 moms who are pregnant, and we're consenting moms, and we're doing blood lead level tests on them. And specifically, they come from three zip codes in the Grand Rapids, Michigan area. And the reason we focused on this is that I'm sure many of your listeners are well aware of the lead in water in Flint. But in 2018, it turns out that Kent County, their health department, put out a study on lead, and actually the incidence of lead poisoning in these three counties were greater than in Flint. And so we are specifically recruiting moms from those three zip codes. And what we're going to be doing is, as I mentioned, we'll be doing blood lead tests on them. And then if they consent at birth, we will be obtaining their umbilical cord blood, which has stem cells that can be then developed into the various white blood cells that circulate in your blood. And we have an assay now to assess the development of these different white blood cells. And so we're really excited about this. Some preliminary studies where we have gotten stem cells from cord blood of moms who have not been exposed to significant amounts of lead, and where we can add lead directly to those cells in culture, we are seeing some pretty interesting effects, showing that we're, and again, these are very preliminary, but again, the long-term goal here is to actually obtain these stem cells from moms who have elevated blood lead levels. And so far we've recruited about 250 moms, and six out of those 250 have significant blood lead levels, and we've consented them now, so we will be obtaining their stem cells for our studies.
This is amazing.
And
hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And again, you know, the reason I think these three particular zip codes have this higher incidence of lead poisoning pertains to the fact that they're older homes that are being renovated. Again, you know, they've got the lead pipes. And so, again, this is, I think, going to turn out to be, you know, not just common, I think, to, you know, Kent County and Grand Rapids. I think, you know, as our infrastructure in this country ages, I think we're, you know, if we look, we're going to find other cities and other areas where, you know, this is going to be a problem.
Norm, this is sort of blowing my mind. First of all, congratulations. This research sounds incredible. And if there are any, I don't know if there's any public links to any preliminary findings, would be thrilled to share. But if not, we'll wait for those results to be published.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing is that this really underscores that there are different sources of lead, right? And so in Flint, and pardon, I'm really not too familiar with the Michigan area, but it sounds like, so with Flint, we were very focused on the water supply. And I'd be curious, I don't know what the updates are there and if we've improved the water supply in Flint. I don't know if you are able to comment on that, but maybe we can come back to that. But then in Kent County, if I'm not mistaken, the source might be the older infrastructure, paint, perhaps pipes. And so this really calls attention again to the fact that we're not just talking about one source of lead exposure.
Exactly.
Interesting. Exactly. So what is going on in Flint? Can you give a brief update? I don't know if I'm putting you on the spot. We didn't plan to talk about it, but any updates there?
I am not aware of what the most recent status is, but I believe that the water supply has been cleaned up, and it was, again, changes in how I think the water is being treated, which was, you know, quite a few years ago now. So I think we're over that hurdle. But having said that, you know, Flint also has older residential areas that, you know, again, is characteristic of a lot of places around the country. And so, you know, if you don't look, you don't know.
Right.
But I think as we do begin to look, we're finding that in some of these older neighborhoods, you know, that this may be a problem.
So can we just come back briefly? And I know you're not a clinician. And so if you're not prepared to speak about this, I understand. But are there certain early signs of potential exposure that folks should have on the radar or anything like that? I'm trying to remember and think back. I believe my kids at some point were tested at a certain age for lead. I think there was like a quick, you know, finger stick or something that checked for it. So I would imagine it's built into sort of that, you know, early childhood test schedule. But any comment on that?
You know, I think the most common test is, as you mentioned, it's going to be a, you know, a blood level test. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, I'm not a clinician, so I'm probably shouldn't be
chiming in here.
Other than the kind of the overt toxicity, which, you know, we're very familiar with, which are, you know, slower mental development, lower IQs, things like that, behavioral problems. But I think by the time you reach those kinds of symptoms,
right,
that really is problematic.
Right.
And again, not to concern your viewers. I mean, but again, a lot of this is associated with older homes, and especially homes being renovated. Mm-hmm. And where you have lead pipes.
Yeah. Well, and as you're talking, and I'm trying to think back, you know, if you're a parent of a young child listening, I know there's a flurry of visits that we take our kids to. And I'm recalling questions and surveys given to me by the kid's pediatrician. But of course, this assumes that people have access to care and regular care. And so, you know, I'm saying this from a place of someone who does have access to regular and ongoing pediatric care. But it sounds like this is definitely something worth discussion with your clinician, particularly if you live in an area with older infrastructure, an older home. So thank you for flagging that. So let's move on to the Stanley Cup issue. And every time I open up my phone, I mean, I'm just looking right here. The Washington Post did a piece, and I'll link to some of these articles. You know, are Stanley Cup safe? There was one in the New York Times about a lead scare strikes Stanley, so on and so forth. This has been really picked up by popular media. And so we were getting a lot of questions. So let me just give a little bit of an overview of where we are, and then we'll love to hear what your thoughts are about Stanley Cups and whether folks should throw out their cups. So actually this month, although I think this will air in early March, we're recording this in late February. So in February, a lawsuit was filed against Pacific Market International, PMI, and that's the company behind the Stanley travel mugs and related products. The lawsuit alleges that PMI knowingly concealed the presence of lead in some of its products, potentially exposing consumers to health risks. There has not been an official recall, but PMI has been proactive. I'm going to link to their company website. They made clear that this issue is specific to certain tumbler models, primarily older ones, and you can actually search for your product to see if it is one of the affected products. The primary concern is that a sealing material, sealing as in S-E-A-L-I-N-G, used in some Stanley tumblers' bottom caps contains lead. And over time, some are saying that there's the potential for lead to leak into beverages if the product is damaged or worn. Others are saying that it's really not in a place where it could contaminate the water. It's encased in stainless steel and separated by the inner layer of the cup. But of course, if the cup is dropped or damaged, the stainless steel could become loose and possibly expose the lead inside, though the entire bottom of the cup would need to be punctured for the water to be contaminated. So, Norm, very curious to hear your thoughts. What do you think about all this?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think if you're worried that your cup may be damaged, you probably shouldn't use it. So, you know, that's common sense. My understanding about these Stanley mugs is that, you know, they basically have an inner layer and an outer layer. And there's a vacuum between the inner and outer layer. And that's my understanding where some of this material may have been used to seal the vacuum. And then it's covered with a stainless steel cap on the bottom.
Correct.
So for somebody to actually be exposed even to that sealant, it would, like you said, it would have to be punctured and I think the damage would be pretty obvious. So I would again tell your listeners I wouldn't be concerned about this in the least bit, unless you've damaged your cup. And if you have a damaged cup, maybe it's time to throw it out and buy a new one.
Right. And these things ain't cheap, Norm. You know, they were all the rage.
Well, I don't own one, so I wouldn't know.
I don't either, but it was funny. We did one of those Christmas white elephant things, and this, I think that's what it's called. I'm a Jew who celebrates Christmas, but anyway, so it was the hot item in our white elephant exchange. Everyone wanted the Stanley cup. I think they're maybe like $30 or something. It's not cheap for a cup that you're using for water. So I know my sense is that some people are hesitant to throw out the cup, but I think what you're saying is spot on, that if it is damaged, you know, you really shouldn't be using it. But just to reconfirm here, so you're saying you would not be concerned if the cup, you know, considering it's in good condition, hasn't been dropped, no major dents or breaks or anything like that, you wouldn't be overly concerned about this.
No, I wouldn't, because I it's the inner compartment of that cup does not come in contact. You know, the part that comes in contact with water would not come in contact with this material. So, you know, I think there's no concern there.
Wow. Well, this is not sponsored by Stanley or PMI, but everything I was reading.
Nor am I. Right.
but everything you're saying, and again, I'm not a toxicologist, and that's precisely why I'm thrilled to have you on here. But everything I'm reading really confirms and aligns with what you're saying, that, you know, of course, all of these things warrant further follow-up, and we're keeping a very close eye on these things. But if your product is not damaged, you do not need to go out, you know, throw out your Stanley cup or freak out or anything like that. So I hope we've allayed some concerns today. Norm, are there anything else you want to share with listeners about heavy metals in general, possible exposures, things that folks should be, you know, have on their radar? Anything else you want to share?
I think getting back to the FDA and their, their closer to zero, policy, or at least what they're trying to achieve. You know, I think that makes sense, but we also have to keep in mind that all these heavy metals are naturally occurring, and we cannot expect to get to zero with any of them. Mm-hmm. So I like that the FDA said closer to zero, because, you know, in our daily lives, you know, based on what we eat and what we're exposed to, we cannot completely eliminate the exposure to these elements. And again, I think, as you said, you know, vary your diet and you know, be smart about what you consume and everything in moderation. And I think that really takes care of a lot of the problems. Now, the one thing I will mention, because arsenic kind of falls in that list of metals, there are a lot of places around the U.S. Where well water is used, and arsenic can be in groundwater. So if you're on well water and consuming well water, you know, you might think about having that tested.
Mm-hmm. And actually, I fall into that category, and that we do our house, you know, we use well water. And so that was the first thing we did before buying the house, was we had the water tested. Yeah. And is that something that we should do sort of, you know, we bought the house 2 years ago. Is that something that I should sort of maybe think about doing again in a few years? I mean, could those levels change over time?
I don't think so, unless you're going to drill a new well.
Got it.
I think, you know, depending on where you might tap into the water supply, but usually those aquifers are quite large. So if you've had it tested and the levels are low or you're not detecting arsenic, I wouldn't worry about it.
Norm, one other thing that you said that I think is maybe worth mentioning here about, you know, the FDA's policy getting closer to zero. I think folks should be aware that as we're updating infrastructure, first of all, that takes time. It also takes money and resources. So it's not something that can happen overnight. Not saying that it's something that couldn't or shouldn't happen. But we do have to be aware and cognizant of some of these practical implications of if we're going to update our infrastructure and change out materials used, right? I would imagine for some of it, it's a pretty extensive process. You know, we're talking about, well, I don't know, water treatment, but pipes and repainting houses. And I don't know, it just seems like it's not quite as, you know, it's not, you're not snapping your fingers and having this happen overnight.
Exactly. Good point.
Well, Norb, thank you so very much for your time and for sharing your expertise with us. Oh my goodness. Sorry. I think this was really interesting. And to our listeners, I hope you found this interesting and that you enjoyed today's episode. I have some great episodes planned in the coming weeks, including on topics like microplastics, common women's health myths, an increase in cancer diagnoses, particularly among people under 50 years, and much, much more. In the meantime, I'll continue to share infographics to the Unbiased Science social media channels at Unbiased SciPod, so be sure to give us a follow. It would also be super helpful if you would consider leaving a written review on Apple or wherever you're tuning in. And if you're watching this on YouTube, hello, please be sure to subscribe to the Unbiased Science channel. Remember, there's also a Substack newsletter. It is free to subscribe, but if you're willing and able, paid subscriptions are much appreciated. Sincere thanks to you for tuning in and following along as we share no nonsense, just science.